You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Third and final hour of tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool Radio Program, broadcasting live from our flagship station in Memphis, Tennessee, also going out to the AM/FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network and simulcasting online to a global audience at thepoliticalcesspool.org and other internet ports of call, although I am not in Memphis tonight. I am still down in Florida, where I have enjoyed to a great extent an extended family vacation, and as I was sharing with you at the top of the program this evening, I have jumped around from Ocala to Naples to Key West, and now on my way back towards Memphis, but that certainly pales in comparison to the travels of our esteemed guest, who is on the line with us now. And it's great, even though I'm in this hotel tonight, to be able to be on the line with my very good friend Mark Weber, who is, of course, the director of the Institute for Historical Review. He is a lecturer, a historian, current affairs analyst, and author. Born and raised in Portland, Oregon, he was educated in the United States and Europe, where he holds a master's degree in modern European history from Indiana University. He is a featured guest numerous times over on this award-winning broadcast, and we are happy to welcome him back again, especially in light of his recent travels, which has seen him bounce around from Stockholm to London and all the way back down to Guadalajara, and we're going to hear all about it. Mark, welcome.
Thank you very much, James. I feel humbled by the generosity of your introduction, but thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be back on with you, and I, of course, admire very much what you and your colleagues are and have been doing as well.
Well, it's a mutual admiration society, to be sure, anytime you're on, but let me tell you something. Those introductions aren't given. They are earned, and certainly you have earned it quite well, and I want to welcome all of the readers of the Institute for Historical Review, the IHR-related publications, for being with us this evening. We hope you enjoy the show and the remainder of tonight's broadcast, which, of course, features Mark Weber. And I know that Mark sent out a blast to his email list, and I am reading it right now, and we'll be using it as a template. So anyway, for the benefit of those of you who did not receive that email, those of you who are not yet subscribed to the IHR mailing list, and by the way, you can rectify that omission before the end of the broadcast this evening. Basically, Mark is on with us tonight for the remainder of the program, the entire hour, to talk about recent meetings of nationalists, traditionalists, and identitarians. I really admire the way we keep coming up with words with an increasing number of syllables to describe ourselves. But basically, what you need to know is that this is right-thinking people in Sweden, England, and Mexico. And in recent weeks, Mark has been to all of those countries, and we're going to learn about his role in these remarkable gatherings and the productive discussions that he shared there with activists, writers, and publishers. And as Mark has written, he's going to also be speaking later on in the broadcast about the long-range impact of these meetings with observations from the streets that he has witnessed for us in these different countries. So, Mark, let's take them in chronological order, if you can. The London Forum meeting, you were there on April the 11th. Fill us in.
Right. I was there on April 11th, and I spoke there also last September as well.
Correct.
The meeting in April was extraordinary. It was the largest, I think the organizer told me, Jez Turner, the largest London Forum meeting they've had, and it was held at an impressive hotel, and it generated quite a lot of alarmist, sensational coverage by two leading London newspapers, and a lot of just over-the-top crazy coverage by several Jewish Zionist news services as well. But along with myself speaking there was also Kevin MacDonald, who, of course, is very familiar to listeners of the Political Cesspool, also Lady Michelle Renouf was one of the speakers. Paul Fromm was a speaker at the event. And a very impressive speaker from Spain, Pedro Varela, a very, very a staunch activist and publisher and writer in Spain was there, along with a colleague of his from Spain as well, and Gregory Johnson from the United States, who runs Countercurrents Publishing, was
right.
also one of the speakers of this event. It was really a great thing at an impressive venue in London. And as I said, it wasn't just that it recharged the people who were at that event, but it let people know, because of all the coverage, that things are really moving all over, and that events like this are not only happening, but there are going to be more of them as the system is an ever more obvious disintegration and crisis. But in my talk, I spoke a great deal, as I have on this show and other shows, about what I call the challenge of Jewish Zionist power. I made the strong point that we do not wish ill or harm to any person based on his religion or his background or so forth. People can't be help who they are or if they're born, but it's very important to identify this power and the impact it has in our world. And the talk was, of course, I think, very well received. But among the other talks was a very good lecture by Kevin MacDonald. And by the way, it's the same lecture he also gave to great support in Stockholm on why it is that Europeans seem to be bent on committing a kind of collective suicide. Why is it that Europeans are carrying out policies that would be considered absurd and crazy in Japan or in China or in Nigeria or other countries? And anyway, he gave a very good lecture on that occasion to try to explain this kind of willingness of European Americans and Europeans themselves to act against their own group interests, against their own identity. Well, anyway, that's a kind of a summary of some of the talks that were given there. Paul Fromm, you could summarize his talk, as he said at the very beginning, in the phrase, my topics are immigration and free speech. Too much immigration and not enough free speech. And he spoke with the usual kind of spirit that he always brings to the meetings that he addresses in the United States and in Europe and in Canada, of course, where he's most active.
Well, you know, you say that, but you know, with Paul, he has such an effusive personality, and he's just such a great guy. You know, we're talking about people who travel a lot. I don't think I've ever talked to Paul where he's been at home. I mean, this man is always on the road, always doing good work for our people, and that is certainly an impressive
right.
lineup that was featured there at the London Forum, obviously, with you serving Mark as one of the anchors. And I get emails all the time from people who say that they tune into this radio program to find out what our people are doing both here throughout the United States and abroad in our ancestral homelands. And we're very proud that any time a meeting of note takes place, that either we were there ourselves or we are talking with someone who played an integral part in the success of that meeting. And we are seeing more of these meetings occur. And then you'll get emails from the other side saying, well, you know, I want to see real action. You know, we're talking about these meetings. People get together. They eat, meet, and retreat. That's the popular catchphrase. Well, certainly, folks, you cannot build a movement before you are able to talk about these issues. But we're going to let you know why you can invest some hope in current trends as this hour continues with our very good friend, Mark Weber. We're going to take our first break of the hour. We'll be back with more right after this.
Good sense and a sense. Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Hello, everyone. James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R-word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
Break the bond of Big Pharma. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour to tell you about the powerful benefits of Strauss Heart Drops. Many people today are locked into the routine of taking multiple prescription drugs. Strauss Herb Company believes that everything the body needs is provided by nature. Strauss Heart Drops may clear congested arteries, restore damaged muscle, maintain healthy cholesterol levels, and flush toxins and metals from the body. They may even be helpful in treating varicose veins. And unlike prescription drugs that are packed with chemicals, Strauss Heart Drops are 100% natural and harness the healing power of herbs like garlic, cayenne, white willow bark, and mistletoe. For the full line of Strauss products, I urge you to call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829, or visit thepowermall.com. And remember, beware of knockoffs. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops.
Get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
As much fun as I'm having on the road, if there is one good thing about going back home, it'll be the fact that for the first time in 2 weeks, when I get back there into the radio station next Saturday, I'll be working with the great equipment in our studio rather than hosting the program on a cell phone or a hotel line as I'm doing tonight. But I'm happy to do so to accommodate Mark Weber, a man who has done so much for our people, a man who has certainly been issuing the clarion call week after week, year after year, for a long, long time now, and has done it to great success. And if you want to talk about travels, for Mark, it began on April the 11th, where he was in attendance as a speaker at the London Forum, of course, in London, England. And then from there, a week later, he was in Stockholm, Sweden, addressing a crowd of nearly 200 people. And then the first week of May, actually May 1st through the 3rd, he was in Guadalajara, Mexico. So we're going to be talking about each of those events one by one, and then the conversation again will shift to that of a broader sense. But these, you know, are important meetings, ladies and gentlemen. And as I was saying earlier, you can invest a little bit of hope in this, because you're talking about serious gatherings of activism and scholarship, featuring serious speakers and serious attendance, and many of them with the brain power and wherewithal to actually go out and enact some sort of positive change. And I know we all want to take to the streets and take our countries back within a matter of days. Well, it just doesn't happen that way, and it certainly doesn't happen until you begin exchanging ideas in a heartfelt way. And the only way you can do that is by abandoning e-activism. And you know, the internet, it can be a great tool for us, but we're never really going to have the kind of synergy we need as a movement until we are meeting together and engaging in robust debates and conversations with one another about how, in actuality, we can go out and get things done in a real and tangible way. And so Mark has been at three very prominent meetings in less than a month. We talked a little bit about London in the last segment, Mark. Now tell us a week later there in the capital of Sweden, what was going on there? And, of course, we had Kevin MacDonald on a couple of weeks ago to talk about this, but I'd love your perspective.
Right. Well, this one of the most impressive things about the Sweden event is that was the seriousness, the intelligence, and the youthfulness of the people who were at this gathering. There were maybe 180 people, almost 200 people at this event, overwhelmingly men in their 20s and 30s. And in conversations with them, discussions, everyone was impressed with the seriousness, the thoughtfulness, the earnestness that these people had, that dedication they had. You know, you made a point earlier about some people want action. They don't think that thinking or theory or discussion is important. In the very programs that you've put on, you've emphasized that the enemy, as it were, spent years working out their intellectual attack before they were able to turn it into political action, whether it's the Frankfurt School or the Marxists or whatever. These people were first and foremost, they got their ducks in a row intellectually and in their program and so forth before they were able to put it in effect. And this is extremely important because many people on our side, they put the cart before the horse. They think they can get things done without any real clear idea of where this is all going to go, except the kind of fuzzy idea that we're going to return to the past in some way. Now, another thing I wanted to just mention about London, the press coverage to the event in London was just over the top crazy, really. I mean, one of the leading London newspapers, the Daily Mail, had this crazy headline saying, calling it a Nazi invasion of London, claiming it was a meeting of Holocaust deniers. In fact, not a single talk at this event was about the Holocaust. Nothing.
Right.
Zero. When you hear the word Holocaust denier, you know that the person isn't trying to explain or enlighten. He's only trying to smear. He's trying
That's
to
right.
use that as a way of running people down. It was absurd. You know, in 1984, George Orwell writes that in this new terrible time in the future, the media is so distorted that what people heard didn't even have the normal relationship that a lie has to the truth. And this coverage in London didn't even have the normal relationship to reality that you'd expect in a lie. No, this was it wasn't even the same meeting. And particularly, I was outraged because the article went on to ascribe to me quotations which I never said, had never written. They were invented. And they, not surprisingly, come from the Anti-Defamation League and from others. But
sure.
That's typical. This is how we live in a society in which those people who distort, who lie, who deceive are rewarded, and those people who tell the truth are punished. That's how crazy it is. But anyway, that was just a sideline. Now, back to Sweden. This was very impressive. I spent several days beforehand because I wanted to understand something about Swedish society. You know, the thing about Sweden that's remarkable is Sweden is at the forefront of trying to commit a kind of collective suicide. Swedes are, or the
Yes.
country, is so determined to be politically correct that they're willing and even eager, even more than the crazed egalitarians here in this country, to sort of jump off the cliff to prove how good they are. Now, this goes right to the heart of the talk that Kevin McDonald gave in Stockholm, and just how especially Northern Europeans, but Europeans in general, will often do things because they think it's the right thing to do, even when it not only is contrary to common sense, but is destructive. I mean, it's suicidal, and that's what Europe is undergoing right now. And Sweden is at the forefront of it, and you see examples of that. You know, in downtown Stockholm, the capital of Sweden, almost every other block now there are gypsy beggars on the streets of Stockholm. Large sections of Sweden now, especially in the south, have become these sort of no-go Muslim areas. I mean, it's madness, really. It defies the common sense that anybody in Nigeria or China or Japan would think it'd be crazy to carry out policies like that. But that's what's going on in Sweden.
Mark, you make such good points, and that was, in fact, the conversation that we focused on with Kevin McDonald a couple of weeks ago when he last appeared on this program, and of course he identifies it and pinpoints it as pathological altruism, and it afflicts our people throughout the Western world, but he says in Sweden it's it's on steroids, and a lot of people, you know, and we were talking about this. I was talking about this with our mutual friend Sam Dixon not long ago, and that, you know, was this just something that was latent? And I've asked Kevin the same question. Was this just something that was within us and latent for all the history of the West up until the early part of the 20th century when the Jewish adversaries that we have, the found a way to manipulate it. You know, people say, and I know that this was a conversation that Gregory Johnson and Jonas Daguerre debated, you know, the legacy and the future of Christianity in the West. But you look at, you know, Europe and the world, really, in the early 20th century, and it was under the complete domination of, you know, certainly our people, and many of them Christians. So anyway, it's a heavy topic, but it's a topic that must be debated, and so that debate occurred in Sweden, and it was very appropriate that this occur in a place that has more rotting of the mind with regards to this phenomenon of white guilt than perhaps any other place in our ancestral homelands, to say again.
Right, very true. I mean, one of the things that I would come away from and emphasized in what I gather from not just these events that I was just at, but other events that I've been at in other countries, and also what we're seeing in America, is increasingly an impressive level of intelligence and commitment by many young people on our side. On just purely on the intellectual level, I mean, we're just really all over the head and shoulders above the opposition. And you can see
I
want proof
to,
of
let's
that.
Talk about that, Mark. I hate to interrupt you, but we are coming up on another break.
Okay.
We're going to talk about the rising amount of youth in our movement right after that.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you sick and tired of just being sick and tired? Are you sick and tired of being told that you are somehow privileged? Are you sick and tired of being told to shut up, both at work and at school? Are you sick and tired of panhandlers pestering you whenever you go out to shop or to eat? Are you sick and tired of jobs that never come and an economy that never goes anywhere? Are you sick and tired of having to take orders from incompetence? Are you sick and tired of movies and television shows that depict a white man as a bumbling incompetent? Are you sick and tired of a government that welcomes non-white immigrants and exposes you to diseases? If you are sick and tired of being sick and tired, then the American Freedom Party is for you. Connect with us, theamericanfreedomparty.us. Once again, TheAmericanFreedomParty.us.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Travelers Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend.
All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com, your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
This hour fleeting far too quickly, as it always does when Mark Weber is our guest, particularly when he's talking about a topic as engrossing as this, you know, giving us a behind-the-scenes first-person accounting of what he has witnessed in his global travels from England to Sweden, and we're about to go to Mexico with Mark, at least through memory, and find out about what happened there. But before we get to that, Mark, and we only have a couple of segments remaining and still much ground to cover before the sand falls from the hourglass this evening, but we were talking about before that last break the rise that you have seen in intelligent, good-looking young people that are beginning to swell our ranks.
Right. Yeah, I mean, both people of intelligence and dedication, this is really important. I mean, because as we've talked before, James, our efforts, above all, has to be aimed at people who must be leaders in the future. That is, above all, at younger people. If we're going to have a future, it has to be led by people who are soaked, you might say, who are educated, who understand the whole issue and all that is really involved, and just how great a struggle really this is. It's a long-term struggle. It's a difficult one. And who are driven, above all, not by the prospect of a quick victory, but by a sense of duty to do what is right, to affirm what is right and do what is right, regardless of the so-called chances of success. That's a difficult thing. Pete, it's very easy to be a supportive of a cause when it seems on the edge of victory or when it's doing well. The real challenge is to support a cause and to do what is right when the going is very, very tough.
Absolutely.
But I'm very encouraged by so many people who understand that. You know, above all, younger people, they don't want to be lied to. Younger people especially, they have a very, very sharply attuned sense of when they're being BS'd, when they're being lied to. And we live in a society that continually tells people things that are just not true. They're contrary to what our own observations and what our experiences are. And that's an important thing that we need to emphasize. We've got to stress over and over that our worldview, our outlook is based in reality. And that of the establishment and our enemies is based on a utopian, fantastic idea of people and of the world. Anyway, this is one of the main points that I see more and more of this all around the world as the system is in greater and greater crisis. Now,
we're going
to talk to Mexico.
Well, yeah. Before we get to that, I just wanted to say very quickly, okay. And we're going to get into more of this in a broader discussion in just a moment, as we have promised a couple of times now. But with regard to what you said earlier, it's so true. It's easy to be like these celebrities. You know, they fashion themselves as heroes to champion a cause that is completely endorsed and supported by the entire controlled media and federal government, as if there's some bravery involved with that. No, you know, those that best understand the strength of a tide are those with the courage to swim against it. And I'm certain, Mark, that we're both proud to be part of the truly courageous. And but we're seeing something here. I don't want to just swim against the tide. I want to change the tide. You know, we had an earthquake in Memphis many, many years ago, well before my time, that caused the Mississippi River to flow backwards. I want to be part of the political equivalent of that, and we want to, once we get it to flow backwards, we want to keep it flowing in the right direction. But anyway, yes, Mexico. I'm actually going to read your notes on this, if I may, because you said that of the three meetings in some ways, and of course, folks, you know, when we're talking about these meetings in England and Sweden and Mexico, respectively, because of the constraints of commercial talk radio, we, of course, can't get into all of the details and intricacies of these meetings, but we're giving you a broad overview, enough to get you excited and encouraged, we hope. But here in Guadalajara, Mark, the most recent meeting, you said it was the largest of the three. It was entitled the International Identitarian Congress, May 1st through the 3rd. Guadalajara, Mexico. More than 200 men and women gather at a spacious hacienda, you write, for presentations by speakers from, and now listen to this, folks, this is what's so impressive, speakers from Argentina, Spain, Germany, Italy, Britain, Mexico, and the United States, including, but not limited to, Ernst Zundel, E. Michael Jones, of course, Mark Weber, Lady Rochelle Manouf, and David Duke. So it doesn't surprise me, you know, that this occurred, but why Guadalajara? The location is a little bit of an eyebrow raiser. How did it occur
in
Mexico?
That's one of the questions. One of the questions I had. Why is this? Well, one of the organizers of this event was at the Budapest conference last October,
and also covered on this program. Yes.
Right. And I didn't really know who he was. We didn't have time to go into great detail. But this man is an extraordinarily dedicated person, was one of the main organizers of this remarkable event. You know, the event was so impressive that it should put all of us here north of the Rio Grande River to shame just how extensive this was. I mean, every night they had entertainment. They had a well-organized thing. They had a youth group. This was a really interesting, well-organized event, not only bringing speakers from all these different countries, as you just mentioned, but they had professional simultaneous translators with little earphones for everybody for the two official languages of the conference, both Spanish and English. I mean, it was a well-organized event. People were put up in nice hotels. And it really, it's an astonishing thing because all of this ferment that's going on in Mexico and in Latin America is virtually unknown here in the United States or even in Europe. You know, the identitarian movement has become quite a big thing now in Europe with publishing houses, websites. There's even a television station in France that's dedicated to this. I mean, this has become an important thing in Europe, but it's very little known here in the United States. And it's impressive that this event was held in Mexico. Now, the reason they held it in Guadalajara was specifically because Guadalajara is considered more authentically a Mexican city than many other places. I mean, I could go into details about this, and I learned a little more about some of the regional differences in Mexico than I knew before I went to this event. But anyway, the organizers don't even live in Guadalajara. They organized it in Guadalajara specifically because they regarded this as an especially appropriate place to have the conference.
Very incredible. And this was the third of the three meetings that you attended and spoke at, played a major role in, from April the 11th through May the 3rd. And you said, again, in some ways, it was the most impressive. So,
right. It was most impressive because not only the attendance was larger because the range of speakers was greater and from more countries, but more than that, there were some big differences between the event in Mexico compared to especially Europe. For one thing, there was a very strong religious tone, even Catholic tone, because identity is not merely national or racial; it's also religious. It's a form of our identity as well, and this was given more emphasis and prominence in the Mexican event, and certainly the religious aspect of it, than it would be in a sort of a meeting in Spain, in Sweden, or in London, or even in the United States, I would dare say. For all its problems, Mexico is a more, in a sense, healthy society than the United States. I mean, it still has a far greater sense of cohesion as a country or as a people than the United States does.
Well, yes,
and I can give many examples of that.
Well, I was going to say, you know, I actually shared a little anecdote in the opening segment tonight in the first hour as we were driving through the Everglades earlier. I think the Muskogee Indians have a greater sense of identity and a healthy perspective on who they are than the people who have so much to celebrate. You know, the people who have gifted humanity with so many advancements in the sciences and technology and medicine and so on and so forth. You know, we are the only ones who are afflicted with this illness, this mental illness that we are. We have to prostrate ourselves in order to have a sense of self-worth. You know, it's very sickening and disturbing, and this is something we're trying to talk about and figure out. I mean, certainly, I believe some of us must have antibodies to this or some sort of an immunity because here we are. But this is something we're trying to help so many of our brothers and sisters and cousins free themselves from. And these meetings, to get back to the topic, play a role in that, do they not?
Yes, a very important role. For one thing, everyone who was from the United States or from Europe was very impressed by many aspects of this event. I mean, at the book tables were offerings, were books, discs, and so forth from all over Latin America. I had no idea of the scope, the range of books and material being published in Argentina, in Brazil, in Mexico, in Spain, that's widely known in the Spanish-speaking world, but virtually unknown here in the United States. And all this is going on. I mean, it's very important that people realize that we have potential, if not actual, allies who are also opposed to all this. It's important to emphasize what we have in common because, as I keep stressing, as should be stressed over and over, we're fighting against forces that are destructive of all cultures and all peoples.
Amen. Yes, and that's something that needs to be repeated, and it's something that, in all truthfulness, is an accurate statement. And so, you know, it's something we'll never be given credit for, and certainly we have a greater concern for our own family first and foremost, but I truly believe what we advocate for is something that would benefit all of humanity if practiced fairly and equally. We got to take a break. We'll be back with our last segment right after this with Mark Weber.
When camping overnight, your tent is one of the most important items you'll have with you. That's why it's vital to have a quality tent that is easy to carry and will withstand the elements. Teton Sports offers top quality tents for any of your camping needs. The Outfitter XXL cot tent weighs only 4 pounds, but provides plenty of space for a comfortable night's sleep. Teton Sports also has a 6-man tent, which weighs only 14 pounds for camping overnight with friends and family. Each tent is easy to assemble and is easily transportable, and each is made with 1,200-millimeter coated polyester, providing strong and durable protection from weather and cold. Teton Sports also offers sleeping bags, backpacks, duffels, and more to ensure a quality outdoor experience. Wherever your outdoor adventures take you, you will be safe and comfortable in a quality tent from Teton Sports. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman's Warehouse, Dick's Sporting Goods, Wholesale Sports, or visit TetonSports.com.
Has your dancing and romancing done gone away? Are you moaning and a-groaning from the stresses of the day? Are you reeling and appealing because a headache's on the way? Well, relax for just a moment. Stress relief is on the way. Of what am I speaking, you ask? The essential oils of long historic use, the wisdom of the ages, the health care of the ancients, frankincense, myrrh, hyssop, and hundreds of others too numerous to mention. What could be more appealing? Do you know that Young Living essential oils is an element of life that makes them extremely effective in body rejuvenation? This element is called vibration, and it works with body systems, not against them. The professionals at Divine Living Oils have tested and been so impressed with this product that we are using them to help others. And who are we? We are health professionals with many years' experience. Trust us, we have seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. Our motto? Because we care about you. Do your health and spirit a great favor. Call us at 304-542-4226. That's 304-542-4226. Again, that's 304-542-4226.
The word vigor is defined in the dictionary as health and strength in body and mind. Do you have enough health and strength in body and mind? Would you like to pursue life with passion? Would you like to know where you stand when it comes to your vigor score? That's right. There's a free scientific test you could take now that'll help you find out what your vigor score is. Then you can do things to improve that score. Did you know that? It's absolutely free, F-R-E-E free. All you got to do is get a hold of Kurt Crosby. You can do so, C-U-R-T, that's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. Or call Kurt at 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Would you like to learn about the scientifically proven vigor test? It's free. How would you like to improve your vigor score? Again, inexpensive solutions are available now. Call Kurt Crosby at 801-669-2211. Or Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor score test today.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Segment of the evening. I want to thank Winston Smith and Sean Bergen and Keith Alexander for their contributions to tonight's program, and of course our featured guest for the evening, Mark Weber, the one and only of the Institute for Historical Review, anchoring tonight's broadcast as only he can. And for the first three segments of the final hour, we have talked about three different very important meetings that Mark has offered lectures to, in, of course, London, England, Stockholm, Sweden, and Guadalajara, Mexico, respectively, of all places. But now we're going to branch out just a little bit, and I've got four questions for Mark, and we only have, well, we don't have many more minutes than that, so we'll keep our answers punchy if we can, but these are all important aspects I want to cover as we bring this to summation. So, Mark, we're seeing, obviously, I think, a rising, as you put it, nationalist identitarian movement worldwide. How much stock can we place into this? So, I mean, we obviously haven't reached a critical mass, the likes of which is going to, you know, we're going to see reflected in establishment media sources and in terms of United States senators or presidential nominees in certainly this election cycle and probably for the near future. But what does it mean that we are having more meetings of more serious caliber all over the world, in addition to, and we've been covering this going back the last year and change, the EU elections, very promising for nationalist parties as they continue their rise in the various nations across Europe. Does all this begin to come together and begin to flow into something that we can really sink our teeth into?
I think that it's on two levels. First, there are people who sort of see what's happening before our eyes. That is, the system is in crisis. I mean, one of the astonishing things to me is that, given all the problems we have in our society, racially, socially, culturally, economically, and so forth, that the answer of the politicians and media people is just more of the same, just to carry on. That's the definition of foolishness. That's the definition of insanity. And more people see that. Now, that's on one level. The other level, though, are people who are looking beyond the crisis, because this society isn't going to stay in place. It doesn't deserve to stay in place. It's built on false premises, and the number of people who think ahead like that is always going to be a small minority. But that's what we have to emphasize. We have to put our primary focus on preparing people for that, because we don't have the power or the ability to change, to keep the system from going in the direction it is right now until it hits real crises. And that's happening more and more, and we just have to get ready for that. But with programs like this one and the work that these meetings are doing, aimed especially, I think, at younger people. So,
there are certainly pieces in
place.
There are people standing on the watchtower for when their time comes. We will be as prepared as we possibly can be for whatever there is in terms of a rebuild in these nations as we seek to rise like the phoenix from the ashes that have been heaped upon us. But, Mark, talk to us about the significance of this closer networking among nationalists in different countries. This is something that certainly, at least to the extent that it is now, I was not aware of when this show started, for instance, in 2004. I think you're seeing it more and more often in a bigger and better way as the months continue to roll by.
Right. I think these are very important. And as you know, at any conference, it's not merely the speakers that are so important. It's the discussions that take place one-on-one and in small groups outside of all of this. And it's very important to set aside whatever differences or disagreements we have, to stress that what we do have in common, to stress what unites us rather than what divides us, because there's nothing more than our enemies would like than to have us all squabbling and going against each other when we all face a common threat and a common danger.
Very well stated. Let me ask you this, and this is what I think may be, in some way, I can't say it's the most interesting question because they've all been important, but you've certainly gone to a great length to share with us the observations from inside the venues of these respective meetings. Share with us now, if you will, Mark, the observations that you took about life and trends in these different countries that you've recently visited. And those, of course, would be Britain, Sweden, and Mexico. And I don't know exactly what I'm looking for here. If there's something you picked up on about the way people walk, are they slouched, are their shoulders square? I guess the most interesting, or the things that stuck out to you the most in each of these three countries that you've been in, in the last few days.
In talking with people, especially just people outside of the conference, ordinary people, there is everywhere in the United States, in Britain, in Sweden, but also in other countries, in Germany and France and so forth, the sense that the trends are very bad. Nobody is really happy to see millions of people from North Africa and South Asia and so forth flooding into Europe. Everybody says they're supposed to think this is wonderful. Nobody really does. This is you talk to people, this is just so obvious. It's crazy. And yet we're all supposed to be like the crowd in the story of the emperor's new clothes. We're all supposed to just keep silent and keep on talking about how wonderful all this is. Nobody really believes it. Now you can see the evidence of this very, very dramatically in Britain and increasingly in Sweden as well. These countries are being transformed, and it's very important. I'm just stressing the disconnect between what ordinary people see and observe on the one hand, and what our politicians and especially our educational leaders, our media tells us on the other hand. You know, another thing I wanted to make an observation about Sweden: a lot of Swedish television is English. It's American. It's the junkiest stuff from the United States. With Swedish subtitles. No, just awful stuff, really. I mean, you get the usual kind of stuff. I mean, this very Hollywoodish, New Yorkish, married with children kind of world in which everybody is cynical, self-centered. This is very and yet one thing that struck me is that a Mexican living in Los Angeles can hear more authentically Mexican television, radio, and newspapers living in Southern California than a Swede can get authentically Swedish culture in his media living in Sweden. That's how the media is to a great extent all over the European world now dominated by this golem, this sort of Hollywood hydra that has taken grip of our cultural life and therefore of our values. And that's a very, very striking thing. I mean, Sweden is ashamed of much of its ancestry. It's ashamed of much of its history. And as MacDonald has said, and as you were mentioning earlier, and as I was stressing, Sweden is even more in the thrall of this kind of shame of being Swedish. I mean, the answer, I guess, is just to sort of just exit the stage of history as quickly as possible so that people from Africa and so forth who are morally superior because they've been exploited should just take over. Anyway, Sweden is at the forefront of this.
Nobody has more reason to be proud of what they've done for humanity than our people, and I mean that earnestly and humbly. But it's a fact, and yet everyone else, you know, no other race or ethnic group buys into this nonsense that whites have swallowed hook, line, and sinker. And it's obviously not all whites, and I say quite often on this program, and I believe it, in the heartland of America and still in many southern states, you know, the rank-and-file working-class whites fundamentally agree with us on a lot of these issues.
Right.
Especially racial issues. You know, the Jewish question is a little bit that's higher learning, but they can get there. But nobody else buys into this, and rightly so. You know, it's amazing that the people who have accomplished so much would fall for this nonsense. But let me ask you this, Mark, and we only have about 2 minutes remaining. What does it all mean for the future? Obviously, we're encouraged by these trends. Is it going to be enough? Is it going to happen in time? Are you hopeful about the future? Are you more hopeful now than you were 5 or 10 years ago?
Well, in one sense, I'm more hopeful because the system's in more and more obvious crisis. But I stressed very strongly in talks both in Guadalajara and in Sweden that we must not be motivated by a calculation of are we going to win or how this is all looking. We have to have the attitude that Robert E. Lee had. We have to be motivated by a sense of duty. We have to affirm what is true and do what is right, regardless of any prospect that, oh, we're going to win this way or do that. This is a very, very important thing. And in that, I think that Robert E. Lee, and of course there are many other men from our heritage and our history to point to as well, who personify this sense of holding to duty despite how difficult the situation is. This has to be, many people are willing to die for their race or their culture or whatever, but very few people are willing to work for it,
mm-hmm.
to do what is necessary over a long period of time. That's when it's not as romantic or as exciting, but it's absolutely crucial and necessary.
Well, that was
but
a line
we have to also... Yeah. Well,
that's what he said. I mean, do your duty in all things. We can never do more. We should never wish to do less. And I believe in that. And, Mark, I can't tell you again how much we enjoyed this hour. It is over. We have only seconds remaining. I mean, less than 10. Give us your website. I want everybody who's listening tonight to go there and support you.
Right. I urge people to IHR.org, Institute for Historical Review, IHR.org. There's a great deal of material, even beyond the front page, in our archives that's really illuminating and useful. And I urge people to check that out and sign up for our free news service. Our
Mark Weber, everybody. Thank you, Mark. IHR.org. And we'll talk to you next week, ladies and gentlemen. I'm James Edwards. Good night. God bless.